Welcome to Bridge the Gap with hosts Lucas McCurdy and Joshua Crisp, a podcast dedicated to informing, educating, and influencing the future of housing and services for seniors. Powered by Markentum.
Welcome to Bridge the Gap podcast, a podcast for senior living. I'm here, Lucas McCurdy, the senior living fan, here with my co-host Joshua Crisp. Hey, Joshua.
What's up? Senior living fan, senior living man here.
Yes. Well, we have another exciting guest as we continue to pursue knowledge of educating, informing, and influencing the space. We continue to get connected to people that have like heart and mind. And our guest today, Kara Saletto, is exactly that person. So, Kara, thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you, guys. I'm so excited to be here.
The stars have aligned, and we are all in Tennessee. I don't get to Tennessee that often, and we are bunkered down in an undisclosed location in Knoxville. It's my first time in Knoxville, and I feel so welcomed, mainly because of Josh and our producer, Sarah. So it's been a great day so far, and this has been an interview that I've been really looking forward to because we're going to be talking about workforce and specifically millennials.
Yeah. So Lucas, first of all, welcome to Knoxville.
Thank you.
Your first time here, even though we've known each other for a while. So glad to have you here hosting with us. So I'm super excited. I've had the privilege of hearing Kara more than once because I attend a lot of the conferences like you do. And been a member of Leading Age, been on the board. Now we manage one of the Leading Age associations, and Kara has blessed us with her awesome. I would say it's not only great information, but you're always so entertaining. So I always look forward
you.
To it. So I know our listeners are in for a treat today. You know, Kara, there are a wealth of topics. As I've heard you talk about, you've got it in your book that we'll be talking about a little bit later. But let's dive in just a little bit more about you, your background, and what you're doing.
Sure. So I live just outside of Louisville, Kentucky. And it's funny that you say the entertainment factor is something you remember because I have actually been a professional performer since I was 7 years old. I grew up in a family band like the Partridge Family. I'm not kidding. And so we had a trailer and traveled around and sang and did those things. So the stage is home to me, and I love being a speaker now and trainer. This is an absolute blend of the perfect worlds for me. Helping businesses grow, helping people get along better, and being a performer to some extent in that job. So I'm happy to be doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, you do a great job at it. So Lucas, tell us a little bit about what we want to talk about today.
Well, we're going to let Kara dive into it a little bit more. But so Kara, you're an expert on millennials. It's been a topic that you've been approached about. You've even, you've written a book called Staying Power that you address these issues. And so help frame this out a little bit for our listeners. And I think the majority of our listeners, they're going to kind of understand, but maybe talk about both sides of the conversation.
Sure. So employee retention, of course, is getting more and more difficult today, particularly in senior living. We have some unique challenges in this space with 24/7 caregiving and Medicare, Medicaid reimbursements, always, fearing cuts and things like that. So this is an area that facilities have to take very seriously today if they want to compete for talent. And so one of the first things that I think leaders must do is understand who we're dealing with today. Because for decades, the "because I said so" model worked. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is because Gen X kind of fell in line and Gen X did what their bosses told them. A lot of people do not realize that Gen X, the workforce was only about half the size of the baby boomers. And so it's no wonder that they did what they were told and they just figured things out. That was the latchkey generation that came home from school, fixed their own snack, got their own homework done before Google. So they became very resourceful and very independent. And they worked that way as well when they entered the workforce. Then came the millennials. So I'm one of the oldest millennials. I was born in 1981, and I had no idea how different I was when I entered the workforce. I actually used to work for a long-term care association, and my boss and colleagues were all boomers and Gen Xers who quickly taught me everything I was doing wrong, that I was wearing and saying and doing all the wrong things in the office. And I had great mentors who kind of smacked the millennial out of me and taught me how to meet their expectations. Then about age 30, I realized that a lot of my peers were different too. And some of them had figured out how to play the game. I mean, let's be honest, right? When you've got bosses who think differently, you can either decide to play the game and succeed in their way, or you can balk the trends and just be your free spirit and say, I'm not going to do that. And then that could stunt your career growth. Mm-hmm. So I had kind of figured out the game, but then I saw more and more millennials coming into the workforce and more of them saying, no, I'm not going to wear pantyhose. You know, I'm not going to play the game. I'm not going to do this stuff that everybody did before me because I don't agree with that. Mm-hmm. And so then I had a lot of managers coming to me and just asking, what is it with you millennials? What is your deal? And why is it that you have zero loyalty? I mean, why don't you respect your elders? Why don't you respect authority? And where did this sense of entitlement come from? And I actually never sought out to be a generational expert or even a retention expert, but the niche found me because people kept asking me those questions. And as an entrepreneur myself, I said, there's something here. There's an actual business issue here, and there's a real gap. And that gap is costing companies a ton of money, because if the managers do not understand today's new workforce, they're going to lose their people. Mm-hmm. So about 4 years ago, we started really diving into the topic, and we asked the question, why? Why is it that a lot of the younger workers don't have the loyalty? And I'll tell you, I was fascinated when I figured out where the changes had occurred. So, for example, my parents got divorced when I was young. And we all know that divorce peaked in the 1980s. Well, that was a huge societal change. Mm-hmm. And then right after that, in the 1990s, is when the globalization happened in corporate America. The internet came in. More companies were offshoring, outsourcing, centralizing, decentralizing, you know, all these new strategies that they could do with virtual workers and offshore workers and things. And so a lot of our parents got laid off. And I was one of those kids that my mom, who's a corporate accountant, she got laid off 3 times before I hit college. Wow. Very disheartening. And she told me candidly and honestly that I needed to look out for myself. And that's what we're seeing today with a lot of the millennials. They were told there's no guarantees. Nobody's going to have your best interest at heart except you. You got to watch your own back. And even in industries like senior living, where we don't see a ton of downsizing, the thing that I remind a lot of administrators and DONs and other leaders is we cut hours when occupancy is down. So we do the same thing. We just do it in a little bit different manner, that maybe we aren't cutting jobs. Maybe we're still looking for more people to fill the slots, but we really aren't giving them everything we promise. We don't give them every shift that we promise or those hours and things. So we need to understand that the companies got rid of pensions and other long-term benefits, and so we can't expect our workforce today to be loyal in that traditional loyalty for loyalty's sake. Sure. Does that make sense?
Oh, it makes total sense. Yeah. So, you know, I've heard you talk on a lot of different topics. We, on this show, Lucas, we've talked about the millennial workforce a lot, millennials and bridging the gap between the young generation, the old generation. You know, in a 30-minute episode, how can we, what's one extremely, if we could take away one topic from your brain today and do just a quick deep dive, what's the topic that our listeners need to be focused on to apply in their workforce today or tomorrow, to attract millennials, to be able to keep millennials, and to be ahead of the curve?
Sure. I think we should talk about entitlement and recognition and how those are tied together, because a lot of people don't realize, again, as we dug into the 80s and 90s and what happened in our society, a lot of people don't realize that personal credit cards became mainstream during that time for primarily middle-class families started to use credit cards. So that means we were the first kids to get whatever we asked for. You know, the explosion and the commercialization of holidays, for example, and all the gifts we got for our birthdays. Think about birthday parties. It used to be every other year, or maybe it was family only. And now, you know, it's an explosion every year. They're spending hundreds of dollars on a birthday party every year for kids. And we were the ones who started that as our childhood. So seeing our workforce today and just labeling them as entitled, that's not going to do us any good. We have to understand that our society today is entitled. And so we want what we want when we want it. Come on, Amazon Prime.
Amen. Amen to that.
You know, we all are paying the $100 a year to get that 2-day shipping and to have instant access to things. We have Netflix and, you know, all of these other things that we have instant access to. So we as leaders need to understand that today's workforce, not just millennials, but everybody has a sense of entitlement. And so do we, even in our leadership positions. So one thing that leaders can do specifically is to stop just labeling the people as entitled and realize that we all feel that we deserve a pat on the back when we do something good. You know, we did get those participation ribbons and trophies growing up, and I hate to talk about that, but what that means is we have a workforce now that expects the at least acknowledgement of a good job. It's no longer a day when you can say, well, I'll thank somebody when they go above and beyond. I'll thank the person that pulls an extra shift. You know, today, if somebody shows up on time and they do their job, it's time to say thank you. And some of the leaders, oh, I get so much pushback on that, guys. They absolutely just, you want to punch me, I think. They get so mad and they say, that's why they get a paycheck. Mm-hmm. Why should I thank somebody for showing up? But the reality is we have a lot of staff that don't show up and that don't show up on time and that maybe they show up, but they're not doing their job. So that's where leaders can really make a difference of shifting that thank you meter and recalibrating their appreciation meter to thank people who they depend on. Thank people who do take great care of our residents today and that do their job, even if they're going to get the paycheck, but they still need a thank you. And that comes from that sense of entitlement that we have today. It comes from the participation ribbons and all of that. But it's an easy and cheap thing that managers can shift and adjust in order to get better results from their people. What gets recognized gets repeated. So are you going to focus on the negative and the punitive? If you're late one more time, or are you going to focus on the positive and start incentivizing your team to do better?
I love that. And it is a paradigm shift. And it does require people maybe that have had that mentality of, hey, you get paid to show up, but a lot more than that.
Sounds like you my gotta boss, be, my dad.
Yeah, there you go. So you experience this even in family business. So that's exactly right. So that is very practical. I might have been guilty of even saying that myself sometimes. We were talking about before we got on the show of what actual, am I a Gen Xer? Am I a millennial? I don't know. I feel like I share some of the characteristics of both, but that's fascinating. So what are you seeing in some of the practical ways? I'd like to believe that there's some great organizations that are taking some of these strategies you give them and implementing them. What are you seeing people do that's practical that anybody can do that doesn't cost a ton of money?
Oh, yeah. Well, one thing that's totally free and makes a big difference is communicate your expectations. Because the more you get to learn this millennial mindset and today's new workforce, just how they think differently and they see that employer-employee relationship differently, then the managers realize, oh, they don't think like I do. And they weren't raised like I was raised with my parents giving me these traditional mantras of stay till the job gets done. And if you're not early, you're late. You know, I didn't learn those things. I was not told to respect my elders. I was told to challenge authority. And if I see something, I should say something. You know, it's a totally different upbringing. So a lot of managers will say things like, maybe you've heard these or maybe you've said them yourself, like, she should know better. Or my personal favorite, that's just common sense. Who doesn't know that already? And unfortunately, when we take that approach, then the gap gets bigger between us and them, and a lot of frustration, a lot more turnover. And instead, if we use those times as a trigger, if you ever think to yourself, she should know better, or that's just common sense, or who doesn't know that? If you ever think that, remind yourself, oh, wait a minute. We haven't communicated our expectations. Because at my first job, now I didn't work in a facility. Remember, I worked for the association, so it was an office job. But nobody told me at my first job that I had to keep my shoes on the whole day. Nobody told me that. It was not in the handbook. I know, right? And it was not covered during orientation. And so here I would kick off my cute high heels at 4 o'clock every day, walk to the copier barefoot. I thought it was no big deal, and yet other people were judging me, and they said exactly that. That's just common sense. Who doesn't know to keep their shoes on all day? And so it took a mentor coming to me and telling me what that expectation was to say, look, I get it. The high heels hurt. Bring some flats, you know, switch to something else. And so we have to communicate the expectations. And the great part about that is when the managers start to adjust their communication approach and they communicate the expectations, the millennials will meet you in the middle. The millennials will change their behavior or change their attitude to better meet your expectations. It's not all about just bending over backwards for the young workforce and doing whatever they want. It's about mentoring them and trying to find new middle ground.
Sure.
So that's what managers can do.
So I think that's awesome. So I could see a couple of different avenues. So you've got an existing workforce, maybe not the culture it should be, that's welcoming and embracing this. There's this whole dynamic shift of expressing the expectations with your existing workforce. But it seems to me a lot of this is outward facing and sharing your expectations with the workforce that you're recruiting. What are some strategies that after, let's say you're working on your culture inside the community and communicating those expectations, what are some strategies you've seen work that are outward facing to clearly express those to maybe even attract the workforce to say, hey, we may not have it all together, but we're trying and we appreciate it. So help us. So come join our team.
So people ask me all the time about recruiting. And especially getting more applicants and things like that. Certainly, you can work on your employer brand out in the community and beef up your selection process, use an applicant tracking system, things like that. But I'll tell you, good retention is the best recruiting tool. Because if you don't have things right internally, if you are not training your managers and supervisors to be better communicators and better leaders, if you're not taking retention seriously internally and you haven't identified people to start putting together retention initiatives and revamping models that don't work anymore, redoing your orientation and onboarding, I mean, those internal things are really the most important place to start, because otherwise you've got people who came into the organization, saw that it wasn't working well, and then they go out in the community and they badmouth that employer. And so that destroys your employer brand. So the first thing is to get it right internally. I'll tell you one thing that totally gets under my skin, and too many facilities have this occurring. They let their staff eat their young. And when new CNAs come into the building and somebody with a bad attitude gets a hold of them and gives them the grunt work or gives them the bad shift or the bad wing or, you know, something like that, or they just treat them bad, almost like they're hazing them, that will kill your recruiting. Because, right, it drives away these good new hires that came in, and then they go and bash that employer out on the street and out in your own community.
Word of mouth, powerful.
Well, we were talking about this. We talked about this on one of our podcasts. We had the opportunity to interview some young ladies that were just going through graduation. We asked them what was appealing to them, what was pushing them towards their choices and in selection. And every single one of them touched on at some level that they had the opportunity, because they were on the clinical side, to do clinical rotations, and they were most attracted and were choosing the employer. They didn't say anything about pay. They didn't say anything about benefits. It was like these people were very welcoming. They cared to know our names. It wasn't the manager, but it was actually the team members actually came up to us and welcomed us. They wanted to sit with us at lunch. They embraced us. So it is very consistent with what I'm hearing from you. So that's fascinating, don't you think?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just, it's an eye-opening experience about how that culture is driven in a new workforce when you're trying to attract people. That culture and that sense of family and just feeling like you're actually wanted, it's not necessarily new, right? It's just a different way of communicating that. I think we've always wanted it, but maybe we've just either packed it down, packed it away during certain generations, and then maybe it's just more transparent today.
So we've talked about expectations. That's a big nugget that we needed to talk about today. I think we've got time for one more nugget. Yeah. Let's talk about one more takeaway for today for our listeners, realizing that we've got developers, owners, operators. We've got team members at varieties of level. And then I think we've got some consumers. So what would be a takeaway for our industry as far as attracting the millennial workforce, changing the culture, empowering people, and actually have staying power, as we'll mention in just a minute?
Yeah. So I would say the one nugget I'd like to leave people with is to start taking retention much more seriously. And that means you have to invest in the retention efforts. I have guided a lot of the corporate groups now that I'm working with and a lot of the leaders at the conferences and things. I've guided them to identify a retention director.
Okay.
Whether that's at the multi-facility level or at the single facility level, somebody who has part-time or full-time responsibility to drive the retention conversation. This stuff gets blamed on too many people. The executives say, holy overtime, Batman, we've got to get this under control. You know, they know the costs are getting crazy, and then they yell at HR. HR. Get this under control. Fix it. Well, HR is up to their eyeballs in FMLA abuse and terminations, you know, absenteeism and all these other problems. And then HR says, no, we're bringing in good people. You know who the problem is? It's the supervisors and the managers. They're driving away my good people. Either they're eating their young or they just don't know how to discipline someone without them quitting. Yeah. And they don't know how to talk to their people or they're not appreciating the job that these guys are doing. And so we really have to kind of make sure that someone owns that and that we stop pointing the finger and playing the blame game of who should fix retention. Mm-hmm. Because the managers, ultimately, what they say, they don't have time. They haven't been given the tools and the training to be successful, which is where companies can come in and save the day there. But they also have their own workload. A full workload of residents to care for or paperwork to do or emails to check or whatever else they're doing. And so they can't even be a good supervisor or manager because the company hasn't given them the tools and the time to be that. So I think really we need to own the retention piece and identify people that are the leaders within each building. Again, whether that's a part-time responsibility for somebody or it's a new role that's created, it is absolutely critical that we take it very seriously so that we can stop seeing all those turnover dollars go out the door and instead just invest them on the front end and get it right. Become a place where people want to work, where they want to come back tomorrow.
So take it seriously, delegate someone, hire someone part-time, I'm even hearing, make them responsible for this, empower them, and it's really an interdisciplinary approach.
Absolutely.
Because it's touching all of the different departments, so nobody's pointing fingers at one another, right?
Right.
That's a great nugget. So in your book, Staying Power, did I get that right?
Yeah.
So Staying Power, you talk about a lot of these issues. We're fortunate that we actually hear at Bridge the Gap, we actually got autographed copies.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. And you can see right here. So it says why your employees leave and how to keep them longer. So we have an exciting opportunity, a good offer for our guests, our listeners. And I don't want to mess this up, but basically for our followers, if you are following us on social media, we're on Instagram at BTG Voice. I knew I would butcher that.
Easy for you to say.
Yeah, easy for me to say, right. And we're on Twitter at the same. And you can follow us on Facebook. But what you need to do is if you have a leader that you feel like really gets this, that you're crazy about, that you want to encourage, you need to tag them on our social media pages. And we're going to draw randomly a book, and you'll get that book, and so you'll be able to share this with them. Also, share anyone, tag them, share the page, and ask them to do the same. So we'd love that. So thank you, Kara, for giving us these books.
Yes, definitely.
And you know, Lucas, what else should we talk about with Kira?
No, I mean, I think it just shows her heart behind what you know, her initiatives are. I think this is a big topic that doesn't end here. So we hope that people do engage with us on our social sites, and you know, Kara, very genuine and very generous to spend time with us today. We're very, very grateful. I think that added a lot of value back to our listeners. Don't you agree?
I totally agree. And, you know, I wish I had all this right now and I was taking notes, but as always, we follow up with notes,
yep.
Show notes, and so we'll yep. include everybody in that. I know this is great for me. I always get a lot out of what Kara says, and so that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's a great show today.
Yeah, thank you, Kara, so much for being here, and safe travels.
And thank you guys for driving the conversation in the right direction. I love what you're doing, and congratulations on the show.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners for another great episode of Bridge the Gap.